At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Well, welcome everybody to our Eve of Season Tottenham Way podcast. The wait is nearly over. I'm Marcus Buckland in the company once again of the Evening Standard's Dan Kilpatrick, the Sun's Tom Barkley, and Tom Allnut of The Times. Brentford away is shimmering on the horizon. As we sit and record this, Harry Kane remains very much part of the Spurs setup, and that four-goal performance against Shakhtar on Sunday does suggest that if he stays, he really could thrive amidst the new Ange Ball setup. We have so much to ponder and predict. Who's going to shine? Who might struggle? Where will Spurs finish? How excited or worried should we be as the 2023-24 season gets ready to kick off? Dan, set the ball rolling. First of all, let's get some business out of the way. Mickey van der Ven is now part of the setup. Give us the nuts and bolts and your reaction to his signing.
Hi, Marcus. Yeah, I think it's good news. Obviously, Spurs have needed a centre-half for a while. Everyone knows that. I think this has dragged on longer than comfortable, really. I think ideally it would have been done a bit sooner. Not sure if he now goes straight into the side at Brentford. I think he'll need a bit of time to adapt to the Premier League, given he's 21, I think, and you know, still not even a full Netherlands international, but clearly a very promising defender, and you know, one Spurs feel is worth €50 million. So I think good news. And speaking or listening rather to Postecoglou after the Shakhtar game, he suggested van der Ven could be one of two defensive signings. So Spurs may not be done in the recruiting centre-backs this summer so far.
Any idea who else might be filling that position then?
Well, I think Spurs have ended talks with Edmund Tapsoba. He was the other player they've been strongly linked to this summer. I think Tosin of Fulham, whose surname I don't want to pronounce wrongly, has been a target for a while. There's been a lot of talk about Clement Longley. Obviously, Spurs are playing Barcelona tonight. There was some suggestion in the Spanish media that perhaps the clubs would use that opportunity to discuss a new deal for Longley. I think he'd very much be a backup. So I'm not really sure, but Ashley Phillips and van der Ven have both come in. So Spurs have strength in that area, but it was obviously a big kind of weak point last season. So there was quite a lot of work to do.
Yeah, oh, you've chickened out then. Adebayo, it's easy. We got there a few weeks ago with old Tosin. So yeah, I've been practicing that for weeks just in case he does come. Another new signing, Tom A. You know a little bit about Alejo Valise. So what should we be looking forward to as far as he's concerned?
What was that pronunciation there, Mark?
Well, I don't know. I did well with Adebayo, and then I pushed my luck with the new big striker.
Valise would not be impressed with that.
How do you say it then?
I don't know, Alejo Valise, I reckon, you know. I don't know, maybe you're right.
I called him a suitcase. Let's hope he's not packing his bags too quickly.
I was speaking to someone the other day about Valise, and they were saying that essentially, you know, there was a fair bit of interest kind of in the last few months. Tottenham very much moved in the last few weeks because suddenly everyone was there for him. Deadly around the box is kind of the idea, I think, that people sort of who've watched him regularly say, you know, very good timing in terms of his sharpness in and around the kind of 6-yard box. Very good in the air, apparently. Not necessarily the tallest, but 6'1", I think, but extremely good in the air. You know, as someone said, he's a bit like almost Tim Cahill-esque, you know, brilliant jump. So I don't know if Spurs think he could be a sort of a second option in that kind of way, a slightly different way of playing, perhaps. But not necessarily the quickest, not going to kind of, you know, turn and run in behind and stretch defences particularly. But I think a sort of almost like a throwback old-fashioned number nine, really. Someone who can be around the area, very kind of proficient finisher and good in the air. So let's see. I mean, there's a suggestion that maybe, you know, he might have been kind of more suited to kind of Italy maybe or even Spain. Will he kind of adjust physically into the kind of harem scarum of the Premier League? Not sure. I think there are some question marks there. Perhaps that's why Spurs have kind of got in ahead of some of the other bigger teams who are looking at him. But I think as a sort of a second option, you know, I think it's not a bad signing. It's obviously a huge fee for Osorio Central, but equally for Spurs, it's not a huge outlay. So it's probably a decent punt.
Yeah, and it's good to have a plan B, a different option. I could imagine throwing him on in the closing minutes of a game if you're looking for an equaliser or a winner. Now, Tom B, as we sit here at the moment, Harry Kane is still very much part of the furniture. You were at the game on Sunday. I mean, what more could you expect from the guy but another four-goal performance? Do you think based on that and the fact that there still seems to be some disparity between what Spurs and Bayern Munich consider to be an appropriate fee, he is now going to stay?
Well, I'm more confident than I was about a week ago, particularly after Dan's story this morning about him leaning towards staying at Spurs now. The only thing to caveat with that is it does sound like Bayern Munich might try their luck with one more offer, despite the last one supposedly being the final offer of around 86 million, we think, which was turned down. So I guess it depends on if you know they really can stump up an amount that Daniel Levy accepts, and then we'll go from there. But I don't know how likely that is. Back to your original question about his performance. I mean, that just a mark of the guy, really, isn't he? Such a professional, which is what all the players have sort of said afterwards and said throughout his time at the club, scoring four goals. You know, he's never getting distracted by the stuff that's happening off the pitch. And it also just shows you that if he does stay, how exciting it could be with this new style of football, this attacking style of football. And, you know, as Dan wrote in his piece this morning for The Standard, he has been impressed with Postecoglou so far. He's enjoying the training sessions, which is something that all the has been feedback that we got throughout the tour. And specifically, we asked Dejan Kulusevski out in Singapore about that. And he was saying how much fun it was. A lot of the players really, really enjoying it. So that doesn't surprise me that Kane is in the same vein, that he's enjoying it as well. And, you know, ever since the start of this, we always wondered why he would leave or why he'd be desperate to go with everything in his stacked in his favour with a year to go on his contract. Obviously, we've talked to death, like the pros and cons of going to Bayern Munich and the possibility of Champions League, you know, winning the Champions League with them, which does make sense. I think we've talked ourselves round to it on that one to see why he would be interested this summer. But yeah, at this stage, I think I'm more confident that he'll stay now.
I think the key thing with Kane is whether he's going to stick to his guns and say, if no deal is agreed by the start of the season, he stays at Spurs. You know, we have heard that Kane expects to stay if nothing's agreed by the Brentford game. Postecoglou kind of played down suggestions there was any deadline in place except the transfer deadline, which is obviously the end of August. But what we saw, you know, a couple of years ago when he didn't get the move to Man City, was Kane kind of came out and I think tweeted, you know, I'm 100% committed to Spurs. I'm staying at Spurs for the season. And I guess there's a chance, and this is just my opinion, that if nothing's done on the eve of the Brentford game, he could just come out and do something similar and say, you know what, I'm staying at Spurs. And if that's the case, then that obviously, you know, kills this deal before the weekend. If in actual fact, Kane would kind of remain open to a deal, then there's a chance this kind of drags on even after the season starts. So I think it'll be really, really interesting to see whether you know, Sunday and the kickoff against Brentford is a kind of true cutoff point, or whether actually this still has legs beyond that.
Well, Tom A, if he does stay and we look at who else has arrived, obviously there's a new goalkeeper in Vicario. We're all so excited already by what Maddison's going to bring to the party. Dan's mentioned Philipsen and Van de Ven. We've spoken about Valise. We've got Bentancur returning, hopefully sooner rather than later. So if Kane does remain, is there genuine reason to be really excited about this season, even though Postecoglou has admitted in the not too decent, in the not too distant past, that it often takes a little while for his philosophy to bed in to a new club.
Yeah, I mean, I think we saw in the friendly at the weekend just how specifically on Kane, you know, how exciting it could be if he stays and plays next to Maddison. You know, I mean, we, of his four goals, two of them were basically assisted, one from a penalty that Maddison won, one from a cross that Maddison put in, you know, and you could see that kind of connection there. I really think Kane would enjoy playing with someone like Maddison, a bit like he did with Eriksen, you know, a few years ago. He's just someone who can spot his runs, plays forward early. You could just see that kind of transition from defence into, you know, the final third was sometimes so much smoother with Maddison there. Someone who's prepared to kind of hang on to the ball in tight spaces and play those passes with the angles, you know, rather than playing the ball that everyone expects it to be played, which, to be honest, you know, a lot of Tottenham's midfielders do. You know, Maddison will look, you know, to his left and to his right and play through the lines much better. And I think, you know, Kane and Maddison could be a really great, interesting partnership this season. I mean, I think, you know, not to give us too much praise in this podcast, but I feel like, you know, right from the beginning, we basically said that the whole Kane Bayern thing hinged on whether Bayern were prepared to pay the money, you know, and that's not to say it's sensible money on their part. You know, the whole thing depends on whether Bayern are prepared to overpay, essentially, for a player that is much more valuable to Spurs than he is valuable to the market. And I think that's where we are now. You know, they've probably made what is essentially a good offer in terms of the market, but they have to pay another 15, 20 million, basically, to get Spurs to say yes. And Bayern are a very sensible club. They have other options, Vlahovic, other strikers they could go to. Are they prepared to overpay by 25, 20 million to basically get the deal done? And we'll see if that happens in the next few days. I guess the, you know, one thing we were talking about, Dan, the other day in the mix zone as well is, you know, are Kane's kind of, you know, I will stay if the deal isn't done at the start of the season. Do we see that positively in the sense that, you know, he wants to kind of get his head down and play for Spurs, possibly maybe sign a new deal in 2 or 3 months if everything goes well with Postecoglou and these early positive signs, you know, develop into something more concrete? Or do we see it slightly more ominously, that it's almost like a threat to Tottenham where he kind of says, look, fine, if you don't get this deal done in the next week, I'm getting my head down, getting on with the season, and next year I leave for free and I have the pick of European clubs. You know, I think you could see it either way. I personally see it slightly more cynically, where I think Kane probably thinks, all right, if you don't want to take the money, that's fine. You're not going to mess about with me for a month. You know, if you don't want to take the 90 million, then we leave it for now. And I'll choose next year. But equally, you know, maybe Spurs think they can have a good season, and why not? You know, I sort of think from Daniel Levy's point of view, you have to believe, don't you? You have to believe the new manager that you've put in place is going to come off, that it's going to be that it's going to work, you know, and he has to think the Spurs in October, November are going to be sitting second, third in the table. That's what he has to think. And if they are like that, maybe Kane will sign a new deal. I mean, coming around to the real point of the question in terms of positivity for the season, I think Postecoglou, you know, in the press conference the other day, has put a lot of asterisks, you know, early on. The tour wasn't perfect. We know that. The Kane speculation is not ideal. He has very much said that. You know, they're still making some signings. You know, I think right from the start, there has to be a sense of realism here, that it's quite possible that the first 2 or 3 months for Spurs could be a bit rocky. And then we'll see how much the club are prepared to stick by Ange and how much the fans are prepared to stick by them as well. I don't know if the others agree with that it could be a slightly, you know, bumpy first few months of the season.
I do agree with that. And Ange himself has come out and said it takes 6 months, sometimes a year, to bed in, as Marcus alluded to at the top. But I also think there are real reasons for optimism. I mean, it's easy to forget that Spurs were fourth last year when Conte was sacked. They were bang in the race for fourth place. They were there for most of the season and they barely strung together 3 or 4 really convincing performances. You know, they're sort of stumbling their way into Champions League contention. You know, they have got a lot of quality in the squad, and if Kane stays, which remains an if, the addition of Maddison, a revitalized Son, Kulusevski, you know, back in a groove, potentially Udogie looking a lot readier than we expected, a new centre half coming in, Bissouma and Richarlison, and in fact all the signings from last summer, who to a man were pretty underwhelming, should be better this year. So I think there's a lot of quality in the squad, and there's a lot of reasons to think that under a progressive coach, it will be rocky, but Spurs have the quality to be challenging for a Champions League spot, you know, in the top kind of four places at the table. I've seen a lot of predictions already kind of writing them off, suggesting they might be, you know, back around eighth, and it's going to be a really, really difficult year of transition. I can understand why people are saying that, but I think there's also reason to think, you know, given the way last season went, that there's no reason Spurs won't be much better and kind of bang in the race for Champions League football again.
Yeah, the one thing I'd say there, Dan, of course, is that Chelsea and Liverpool were treading water last season, and we don't expect that to be the case again. Tom B, you spent most of the summer with Ange, and you told us a couple of weeks ago that you really like the guy, but with your head rather than your heart, do you think he's going to be an instant success? And if we take on board what Tom A was saying about Harry Kane, the first few months are going to be critical if he is going to be persuaded to sign a new contract. And it sounds, listening to you guys, as though that is unlikely to be the case.
I think rocky is the word he's described his starts at clubs generally, because he tries to change so much. So that is obviously what we can expect. But the one thing that keeps coming back is how much the players have bought into his methods, and very, very quickly. So that's a huge positive for trying to change all these things. And we could see from that game on Sunday where he felt they were playing for a 1-0 for the final 5 minutes of the first half, after they'd gone in front through Kane's penalty. And he was getting really annoyed at his team. And they obviously didn't even work, because they conceded just before half time. And that's why he kept him in the dressing room for longer than he was supposed to. And actually, Kulusevski said afterwards that, you know, he was really angry, and the reason for that was because he doesn't want them playing within themselves, playing defensive football. But Postecoglou also appreciates that that's how they've been playing for the last 3 years. So that just sort of, you know, underlines just how big a change this is going to be. I can't help but just having watched that game on Sunday, and just felt worried about that high line that he likes to play, and how long it's going to take for that to start paying dividends with this team. Now, Van de Ven is going to be hopefully a transformational signing on that front, just because he's so quick, and that will be very much needed. But I can foresee there being issues against a lot of clubs with that style of play, particularly in the beginning, and particularly Brentford away on Sunday. So. I think, as I said, I think he's got the backing of the players. He plays the right way. I think he's going to have the backing of the fans if he hasn't already, just because he's trying to play in a positive way, particularly if he manages to convince Harry Kane to stay, or at least, you know, through the summer. But that doesn't mean that there won't be some dodgy looking scorelines, I think, in the first few months.
Yeah, I know we're going to come on to Brentford in a bit more detail, but watching the Shakhtar game, I did feel almost every time they went direct or played a kind of diagonal into space, Spurs didn't look comfortable. And Brentford and United, obviously with Mbeumo and Rashford and others, you know, are very good at kind of hitting balls into those spaces. So I think there's going to be some hearts and mouths in the first couple of games. I think it will be sticky, because as good as they were going forward against Shakhtar, Spurs still didn't look like a great defensive unit. So, yeah, as Tom says, that they kind of need Van de Ven to be transformational at the moment, because I certainly wouldn't feel particularly confident for Spurs if they went into either of those opening games with Ben Davis as the left centre-back.
Well, now's probably a good time actually to talk about the Brentford game and then Manchester United, because obviously seasons are fragile. And if you're 0-2, as it were, to use an American term, after Brentford and Manchester United, all the questions are going to come out again. Kane's future is going to be questioned again, because we'll still be in August. So Tom A, yeah, the fixture list hasn't been that kind, and there is definitely a chance that we're all going to be clinging on for dear life after just two matches. Agree?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, it's possible. I mean, I sort of think, you know, when you look back to some of the other teams who have undergone these kind of transformations recently, like Ten Hag's United, you know, we think about how, you know, Brentford kind of tore them apart early last season. Arteta's Arsenal, obviously, you know, in the first couple of seasons were very up and down. I even remember, you know, Klopp's Liverpool as well, you know. And I think the key to all of those, you know, who we probably consider to be, you know, to varying degrees successes now, was that you could kind of see a clear direction of travel, you know. And I think the fans and the club will, and the players particularly, will stick by Postecoglou as long as they can see what the plan is, you know. And I think, you know, everyone always talks about results being key, and that is true to a degree, you know, that there's Tottenham can't be 16th or something after 10 games. But equally, I think people will give him some leeway. People will give them some margin here, as long as they can see what the plan is and what's trying to be done. And I think, you know, the one thing with Postecoglou is that he has complete belief in his methods. You know, the one asterisk we should probably put here is that, you know, for all the kind of idea that, you know, the players are enjoying the training sessions, having a lot of fun, think Postecoglou is great. You know, there's sort of, you know, new freshness around the training ground, et cetera, et cetera. It is worth saying that was also the case, you know, under Conte, for example. You know, I remember writing a piece about a year or so ago, 18 months ago, where, you know, everyone in the training ground was saying, you know, how they were loving the kind of intensity and the detail and the sort of, you know, the winning mentality, et cetera, et cetera. And we know how that unraveled. So I think it's worth not getting too carried away by the kind of early enthusiasm. Equally, you know, I do think that there are some, you know, some reasons to be hopeful. And let's not forget, you know, the bottom line here is that Spurs fans, players, everyone involved with the club is just desperate to see better football, exciting football, a manager that's behind the team, and, you know, a side that ultimately is trying to attack and score goals again. And okay, they might get beat 4-2 here and there, and, you know, 5-4 or whatever. But I actually think Spurs fans will enjoy that. They'll put up with that a little bit this season, as long as they can see a direction of travel and that the team is going somewhere.
Yeah, and it's worth remembering, of course, that Brentford are going to be without Ivan Toney for the first half of the season. Manchester United are continuing to tinker just a little bit. So who knows? It's impossible to predict what's going to happen. I agree with you, though, Tom. I think if Spurs are losing a few games 5-4, fans won't be too upset if they can see where the club is trying to go. And with that in mind, Tom, be to start with, who in particular do you expect to thrive under the Postecoglou guidance?
Well, a lot of the players, to be fair. I mean, I think Kulusevski, a lot of the attacking players, obviously. Kulusevski is someone that, despite him, he doesn't think he had the worst season last year, and his numbers weren't actually that bad. He's only got 2 Premier League goals, but he got 7 assists. But I think all of us did feel he wasn't anywhere near the same heights, as dangerous as he was in that first half, in that half a season when he first joined on loan from Juventus. And he felt a bit predictable, but he's someone who's going to be playing further up, more attacking, out wide more often. I think someone like that could do well. Obviously, Son after last season. Obviously, James Maddison. You could go through most of the attacking players, really. But I was just thinking about the Brentford game and the fact that Ben Davies has been playing left-sided centre-back in these last few friendlies. Now, it was interesting that Dan was saying about Mickey van der Ven, will he go straight in or not? And I wonder, one of the reasons why maybe Davies has played there is because Brentford, without Toney, don't really have, to my mind, a target man who's, you know, someone like Toney against Davies at centre-back would be, in my mind, a recipe for disaster. But they don't have one at the moment, and nor do Man United. So I wonder if that was part of the reason why he's been playing there during pre-season, perhaps, unless Van de Ven's going to come straight in, which, to be honest, I probably favour. But yeah, I mean, the likes of Adogi going forward, I think that will suit his style of play. Just anyone with a sort of attacking, sort of front foot kind of approach is definitely going to suit him more than it was under Conte. I mean, the only one that would be interesting is whether it suits Harry Kane even more, because it's hard to see how he can get even better than he was last season. Mm-hmm. But we're all thinking perhaps he can because of the chances that will be created.
So the simple summary is that the guys going forward are going to look good. The defenders are going to struggle a little bit. I'm intrigued with Romero, Dan. Obviously, now he's going to be playing, you know, as a 2 rather than as a 3. And he's the guy who's got to make it click. Do you think he's going to be okay in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting point about Romero. I mean, he is not really used to playing in a 4 at a club level. I know he has done it, and he's obviously done it for Argentina very successfully at the World Cup. But you could see back end of last season what happened when Spurs switched to a back 4. Obviously, the Newcastle game under Cellini, and then, you know, Mason did eventually play a back 4, but even he was reluctant to do that immediately. He felt like he needed at least a couple of weeks on the training ground to try and sort of deprogram the players from the five. And even then, he ended up playing the kind of hybrid four and five system, didn't he? So as Tom B said, you know, it is a huge shift. And I think it will take time. I think Romero is going to be very important. You know, Postecoglou demands his players play out from the back. You know, that all starts with the goalkeeper, that will start with Vicario, but Romero is going to be a hugely important cog in kind of setting the tone for the way Spurs want to play. I think he will be told to be incredibly brave, to take risks. And Postecoglou's been clear that occasionally, you know, that backfires and you know, risks do sometimes have negative consequences. So I think there will be mistakes leading to goals, particularly in the first few months of the season. But I think it will suit Romero. You know, he's good on the ball. He's a great kind of progressive passer. He's capable of playing out kind of crisply and adventurously. So, I expect him to do well. But yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on those guys, particularly with the kind of absence of a true holding midfielder. You know, it could well be Bissouma in the kind of pivot against Brentford. It's going to be a big ask.
Just one other subject I want to broach before we go on to our actual predictions, and that's with regard to Daniel Levy, who has apparently jetted off to Miami. I can't really imagine him lying on the beach in his Speedos doing nothing for a couple of weeks. But what I want to know, I guess he does know this, but what's going through his mind? He's a businessman. He likes to get the best possible deal. So is he thinking, well, if I can't get 100 million, then I'm happy not to sell Harry Kane, and that actually I might get a bit of kudos from the supporters for not flogging our major asset? Is he panicking? I'd just love to know what's going on inside his mind. Tom B, I don't know if you can shed any light on that.
Well, I can't claim to know exactly what's going on in his mind at all, but one thing that we've known over the years about Daniel Levy is he doesn't react well to being pushed into a corner. Which is what Bayern Munich seemed to be trying to do with this imposed deadline last Friday, which expired, and it looks like they might come in again. So that didn't really hold any water. And even, to be honest, the one about Harry suggesting he wants it all done by ahead of Brentford, either way, you still think, well, as Ange Postecoglou said, the only real deadline that matters is the transfer window deadline. And again, I could still see things rumbling on that front. I do think he's always been known as a businessman, and obviously the idea of letting him go for free next season is at odds with that idea. But I think Harry Kane's such a unique figure in Tottenham's history. He's their best player. He means so much to them that it's not as simple as sell for a lot of money now or lose him for nothing next season, in my mind anyway. I think he genuinely has the possibility of leading Spurs back to the Champions League if he stays, which, you know, from a purely financial point of view would probably be worth it. If he were to walk away for free, he'd probably compensate that with 100 million or so. But I still think there is part of Daniel Levy that hasn't ruled out the prospect of getting him to sign a new contract. Obviously, there's so many caveats to that. We pretty much know that's not going to happen in this window. But from people I've been speaking to, it feels like he hasn't completely ruled that out. So that might be part of his thinking as well. Because if that were to come off, then he somehow managed to convince Harry Kane to sign a new contract. You do wonder how fans would react to that, because that would be an amazing bit of business. Obviously, it's so many caveats to that. Would it actually happen? I don't know. But the fact that there's a belief that could still happen is quite telling, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, Tommy.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, I sort of agree with some of that. I guess the one thing you would say is that Harry Kane is for sale this summer. That is the kind of bottom line here, is I think in previous years, Kane really hasn't been for sale, you know, no matter, you know, how much City wanted to pay for him, etc. But we know really that the way Tottenham have met with Bayern Munich, we know that Daniel Levy has an open dialogue with them. We know that Bayern feel confident about this deal, you know, in part because they know that the lines of communication are very much open. The question isn't whether Daniel Levy wants to sell Kane, it's whether Bayern are prepared to pay the money that he wants to sell him, right? So it's not a point of principle. it's a business decision, and I think that's entirely consistent with how Levy has run Spurs during his time. And we look at how this has played out before with Berbatov, with Bale, with Modric. It's always come down to the numbers. Essentially, it's not come down to let's keep Luka Modric because we can build a team around him. How can we get the most money for an asset and then reinvest that in the team? And okay, you can argue whether the reinvestment went well and whether that's a good policy for Spurs, but that is and has been Daniel Levy's policy. Now, okay, Harry Kane is a special case. He takes this argument to the extreme because of everything we know about Harry. But equally, I think it still comes down to the fact if you're going to risk losing him for zero next summer, Levy would 100% take, 100 million, 110 million, whatever it is. Of course, there's going to be a number there. He doesn't take 20 million, but there is a number, and that is the bottom line here. I think Levy will look at it and say, we can't afford to lose Kane for zero. And they'll think he's an academy player. We bought him for nothing and we can sell him for 100 million. That is a sound business decision. And that's how they have and will always run the club.
Yeah, well, we can just wait and we can hope, and eventually we will see what happens. In terms of Tottenham's rivals, and of course Arsenal won a very meaningless match at the weekend, but Manchester City have got a pretty poor record in the Community Shield, so I don't think anyone's going to read too much into what happened in that game. But Tommy, City, United, Arsenal, Liverpool, Chelsea, Villa and Brighton. I've written those teams down. And Villa and Brighton, of course, have not appeared in such lists before. But the way Aston Villa played under Unai Emery in the second half of last season and who they bought during the summer as well makes me feel as though they're going to be a threat. And De Zerbi, we've spoken so much about him, did a brilliant job at Brighton. They're having an interesting summer in terms of players they're signing and players that they might be forced to sell. But of those clubs, who have done the good business and which of them realistically do you think Spurs can finish above?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Brighton and Aston Villa are very much in the conversation. And that is, yeah, I think every year we always kind of say, well, this team is not going to be as bad as they were last year. The top four race is going to be even more competitive than ever. And it is always the case, I think, that one or two teams disappoint. Something goes wrong. A signing doesn't come off. A manager goes off the boil. And I'm sure that will happen again. It looks like everyone's going to be fantastic, but it will be the case that two or three teams won't deliver. I think you can nail on, obviously, City will be there. I think Arsenal will be there again because of the signings they've made, the way they've kicked on. I personally don't see a Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool finishing outside the top four 2 years in a row. And I think they're making signings to that effect as well. And I think it will come down to the last position. I think those three are going to be in it. And I think the last one will be between United, Spurs, Chelsea and Newcastle primarily. I think Brighton are a fantastic team. I think they will struggle to deliver what they did last season. You never know, but let's see. They've had to sell a lot of their players again. Can they keep, reinventing that wheel? I don't know, but it would be an incredible thing to pull off, having sold, McAllister and probably Caicedo as well. And Aston Villa, impressive team. Emery's an amazing coach. Historically, he has struggled a little bit more when people start to kind of defend against his teams, and realize they're a good team, and then they take a draw. And I think they have benefited slightly last season from kind of the initial effect, if you like. So I think it'll be between those four. You're asking just my pure opinion. I think Chelsea could be a mess again. I think all the indications coming out are that things are not straightforward there for Pochettino. I wonder if United will be on an upward trajectory. The general popular opinion is they will do well again this season under Ten Hag. I'm not sure. I personally think it will be interesting to see if they can keep going. Newcastle, Tom knows more about them than I do, but I think they're in a similar position to Spurs. I essentially think between those four, it's going to be tight, but I think Spurs are right there in the mix.
Actually, well, I must apologise to all I don't suppose many Newcastle fans are listening. I didn't put them on my list. I've forgotten about them. But yeah, there are eight. I mean, technically speaking, we could come ninth. Obviously, we would come ninth if we finished below those. And then if one or two other teams are half decent and surprise us, Tom B, we'll be in the bottom half of the bloody table.
Well, I was going to say you left out Newcastle, and I quite like the business they've done. It's been obviously a lot more measured and understated than people were expecting when the Saudi takeover first happened. But Tonali, I think, could be a real a transformational signing for him for Newcastle. I think Harvey Barnes is a clever signing. I fancied Spurs to have him as well. I know there was a suggestion that they put in a joint bid for Maddison at one point in the window, and they definitely liked him. It's funny, when he signed for Newcastle, I think a few Newcastle fans who loved Alisson Maximin were questioning him, but he just suits Eddie Howe's style of play a lot, and I think he'll add goals to that team. Livramento, someone I watched a lot for Southampton, but he's had a bad injury, so that feels a little bit risky for me. But overall, they've got some really good players, so I fancy them to do well. Man United, I don't quite agree with Tom. I think they will get better this season. I mean, obviously, the new striker they've spent all this money on, I don't really know much about. It seems a bit of a gamble, but from all reports, he's obviously talented. But I just think Marcus Rashford is one of the top players in the league now. So they've got a lot going for them. I guess the caveat with Newcastle and Brighton and Villa, and I guess Man United to a certain extent, is that now they're having to deal with European football. So maybe Spurs can capitalise on that. But really, it's all hinges on Kane. If he stays, then suddenly everything's looking pretty rosy. But if Kane does leave, I think in Ange's first season, if Spurs have made Europe, and that's, you know, Europa League conference, I think that's a pretty good season given the transitional side of things. And maybe not so much if they have Kane, that would be good. But if they're making the Europa League, I still think that's quite decent. The only one thing to add, and I'm still not quite sure if this is definitely the case, but I've read a few reports on it. The suggestion is that this season there might even be 5 Champions League spots, because the following season, the plan is for the Champions League to extend from 32 to 36 teams. And it hasn't been nailed on that it's the English league that will get the extra spaces to qualify for it. But it sounds like that might be a possibility. So if I'm right on that, and England do get 5 spots, then that could be huge. And that could play into, you know, why hanging on to Kane could be even more useful. But what's clear from this conversation is that there's so much strength and depth. I mean, Villa, they've just signed 2 of the biggest sort of prospects or talented players outside of the top teams in Europe, in Torres and Diaby. So, yeah, it does frighten me a little bit.
The Champions League place, I think, depends on basically how the English clubs do in the Champions League and maybe even the Europa League as well this year. So leagues get allocated an extra place depending on how well they've done in the previous Champions League. So it's 4 as a base, but it could be 5 if the clubs do well. So
it could be 5 this year.
A better chance.
So it could be 5 this year.
5 qualification places this year. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's quite likely.
Cheering on Arsenal in the Champions League.
Perverse. We've got to start. We can't start cheering on bloody Arsenal in the Champions League just so that we might get into it. I mean, that's going too far.
True, but I mean, I think it's quite likely that the English teams will do well. I mean, they've got all the money in Europe, haven't they? And so I think there's quite a strong, distinct possibility that could be the case. And if suddenly it's 5 spots available, 4, I don't fancy Tottenham. 5 is wide open. So
I think it is a fair point. What Tom said is a really big point, that although it looked terrible and they didn't finish in European places last season, all those teams we just mentioned are going to be, you know, fighting it out in the Champions League and Europa League, you know, and that could be a big thing for Spurs, you know, the extra training time, not having that distraction, if you like. This is, you know, we have seen before teams who have dropped out of the kind of European spots. Chelsea, you know, obviously, you know, comes to mind the season they won the league, right? With Conte, they weren't in Europe. Is that right?
Yeah, because
you know,
they finished 10.
We've seen this happen before where teams really excel sometimes. And, you know, it's possible that Spurs could really benefit from that. So I think they'll be in the mix. I wouldn't have them in my initial top 4, I have to say. But, yeah, who knows?
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, that season where Spurs did qualify under Conte, they rode that crest of the wave of having that one game a week all that second half of the season, didn't they? So they were in Europe earlier that season, but they'd gone out and that really suited them and this particular squad, which isn't that different yet. I mean, still got the ones Kane stays, still got the same front line. So they've got a history of doing well in those conditions. And it would, yeah, I guess it would suit any team sort of chasing down. It's a weird thing, that weird quirk now of the Premier League, isn't it? That there's so many good teams that every year one or two teams that you'd think should be in Europe don't make it, and then they benefit from it the following season. And let's hope it's Tottenham.
Yeah, having said all that, we only played one game a week towards the end of last season. Didn't do us a lot of good, did it? So who knows?
True, yeah. I would like to see the stats on one game a week teams and see if it actually delivers. It does feel a bit like a cliche, you know. Oh, more time on the training ground, you know, more tactics, et cetera, et cetera. Get thumped 6-1 away at Newcastle is the actual result. So I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, now I promise we are going to get onto the predictions, but the sharper amongst you may have noted that Dan Kilpatrick's been silent for a few moments because actually he went off to watch the closing stages of the Barcelona friendly, which has just ended, and Spurs from 2-1 up have managed to lose 4-2. So, Dan, same old story of misery, or do you come back with exciting things to tell us?
Well, I've been keeping half an eye on the game. I do wonder whether kind of losing gloriously, because this was a very encouraging Spurs performance overall, but a 4-2 defeat from 2-1 up, as you said. And I do wonder whether kind of losing heroically might be a theme of the first few months of the season. You know, it goes back to what we were saying earlier, what Tom A said about you know, fans being encouraged, provided they're seeing the right things. And this was definitely a lot of the right things. In fact, for a large part of the game, a Spurs B-side, obviously, without Kane, Kulusevski, Madison, Romero, etc., really outplayed Barcelona, who started with their strongest 11. And there was a lot of interesting takeaways from it, I think. This was the kind of team that had it, they lined up over the last few seasons, you know, under Conte and Mourinho in, say, Europe or a domestic cup, I think we'd have all known what to expect. It would have been really turgid, really predictable, really underwhelming. And everyone would have been absolutely furious at all the players and said, why are these guys still around? Get rid of them. But actually, Davinson Sanchez was really, really impressive. He made genuinely 3 or 4 kind of last-ditch tackles, looked really commanding at the back. Lo Celso had another good game. Oliver Skipp scored twice and was very good, made some kind of encouraging late runs into the box. Bissouma was good. So I think, you know, this was just a kind of sign of what a structure and a philosophy and what good progressive coaching can do for a side. So I think lots of reasons to be optimistic. A few players, notably Sanchez, put themselves in the shop window. A few players like Skip might have played their way into the starting 11 for Brentford. And I think, you know, despite the result and shipping 2 late goals, it was an encouraging night for Spurs. I would say the one player who had a really poor game, I thought, was Reguilon. I imagine maybe too early to write him off, but I can't imagine Postecoglou would have been impressed by what he saw. He was at fault for at least a couple of the goals. So I think we're looking at Destiny Udogie starting the season as the left back and maybe Davis as the understudy as it stands.
What was Richarlison like leading the line in the absence of Kane, who didn't travel, of course, depending on what happens? The onus could be on Richarlison.
He was decent. I mean, I suppose you could say it was a kind of glimpse of life without Kane. And I suppose in that regard, you know, having this structure and this philosophy that the players can kind of step into, which is so different from the previous regimes, which were so much more reliant on star quality, if Kane is to go, you know, that would certainly make it easier to adjust to life without him. That would soften the blow, the fact that it doesn't feel so reliant on individual quality now. Richarlison was okay. You know, he wasn't outstanding. He wasn't poor. You know, there were players that certainly impressed me more. But he was coming into this game on the back of a knock. So perhaps he wasn't kind of quite at the races.
Can I also just ask about Perisic? Because he's someone that we thought was probably going to be out the door. And I still think if his wages weren't so high, he maybe still would be. But actually, during those 2 games out on tour, he actually quite impressed me. His delivery was very good. And I have caught the highlight of the Skip header. It was another great ball. So did you watch him going, now he's playing left, wide left, rather than sort of wing back? Thinking, he could be someone who'd actually be quite useful if he's going
to
hang around.
Yeah, absolutely. I forgot to mention him, but he was very good, actually. He was also involved in the first goal. He played a kind of clever pass down the line, actually for Reguilon. He was better going forward than he was defensively. So he was involved in definitely the first 2 goals for Spurs. Yeah, I'm torn on Perisic because I think, you know, he felt like such a Conte player who was obviously signed for Conte to do a specific role in Conte's team. But he's looked good. And I think he would be a very good impact sub. You know, he's someone who can come on and can be relied upon to put in a dangerous cross from a wide area with either foot, you know, pick a pass. And if Spurs are sort of struggling to break down stubborn defensive sides, you know, he is someone that can pick a lock. I don't think he was right for wing back in the Premier League. He just wasn't kind of physically quick enough or strong enough. But I think as a kind of cute winger who can pick a pass in the final third, you know, he could be quite effective.
Sounds to me like Dan's been watching this game pretty closely. I almost wonder if he's been paying attention to this podcast at all. I mean,
he barely does. Well, I must say, you know, Perisic, yeah, I could see him creating for our new friend, the suitcase, valise. So who knows? All these options, which brings us to the moment everyone's been waiting for, our predictions. And we're going to just very quickly go through breakout star, player of the season, who we think the top scorer will be, who it's a particularly big season for, who we fear is going to flop, what we're most looking forward to, a funny moment, and ultimately, what position are Spurs going to finish in? So, Tom B, let's start with you. Breakout star is going to be
Hapsar, I think. I think I might go for him. I'm not sure if anyone else fancies him as well, but having watched him against Shakhtar Donetsk the other day, he is someone that, the way Ange likes to play with these two number eights, he was quite effective alongside Maddison. He's kind of got everything to his game, really. He had quite a few shots in that first half, and he could have scored. And he has a decent technique on that front. But he's quite tough in the tackle. He's got great energy. He's picking up sort of spaces quite nicely. I think the more he plays, the more confidence he gets, particularly in a more advanced role, he could be really, really useful. And I do wonder, you know, if Højbjerg were to leave, it does still feel like Spurs might go back into the market for another midfielder. But then when you see how Skip got on tonight and how much Postecoglou seems to rate Sarr as well, you wonder if that's really necessary. So I wouldn't be surprised if he was someone that had slowly but surely more of a role this season.
Well, you stole my thunder. He's getting two votes because Sarr's my man too. Tom A.
Yeah, Sarr's a good shout. I mean, I think Adoji is another big one. I think, you know, it looks like he's going to get the kind of the nod to start at left back. And it was interesting at Shakhtar how much he kind of came inside. It was sort of trusted almost to play as a, you know, pivot midfielder almost when Spurs had the ball, you know, as a kind of inverted fullback. So I think he'll be an exciting addition. I'm interested to see how Bissouma gets on as well. I think, you know, it's such a nightmare season for him last season. Just really didn't click with Conte. And I like to think that maybe under a different manager with a bit more responsibility, a bit more continuity, he might be one to who can really come through under Postecoglou.
I'm going Udogie as well. I've been impressed with him in pre-season. I wasn't quite sure what to make of him when he came in. I hadn't watched the Serie A last season, to be honest. I wasn't sure whether he was going to take time to adjust or whether he was more of a wing back than a left back and wouldn't suit Postecoglou's system. But he just looks ready, you know, from what we've seen in pre-season. And you know, that may not be the case when the Premier League starts, who knows? But I've been impressed with him. He looks kind of physically and technically very good. And even just kind of, you know, standing in the mix zone with the two Toms after the Shakhtar game when he walked through, you know, he's quite a physically imposing guy. You know, he's a big guy. He looks like a footballer. He doesn't look like a teenager who's just been signed and is one for the future. So I've got kind of high hopes for Udogie. And again, having kind of watched Reguilon struggle tonight and having watched Davis, you know, be fairly kind of conservative in that position over the last, you know, 8 or 9 seasons, I do hope Udogie gets the nod as the kind of attacking left back. So I think that would be quite exciting.
Okay, so we've got a couple of votes for Udogie, a couple of votes for Sarr with regards to breakout star. Now, player of the season, and again, obviously, depending on what happens to Harry Kane, all of these things might look a little silly. But actually, I am going to tell you here and now, I did have that dream about Ndombele, which has already turned into a nightmare, so it's not going to be him. But I think that Heung-Min Son, fit again, desperate to make up for the frustrations of last season, is going to be the standout star and will be Tottenham's player of the season. I'm talking as much with my heart as my head there, but I really feel, having heard what he's been saying over the past few weeks, that you know, he feels he let everybody down. And clearly there were mitigating factors, the position he was being asked to play by Conte, his physical condition, just the way the team was playing. So I've got this feeling that Son is going to be our superstar. What other names do you guys want to put forward, Danny?
I mean, I'm assuming we're not counting Kane. You know, if he stays, I think he's got as good a chance as anyone to be the player of the season. So not counting Kane, I'll go for Madison. I think he's just such an exciting signing. I think he's very Spurs. He feels like a Spurs player. He feels like the heir to Eriksen at last. And there's just no one like him in the squad, as we've known over the last few years. I mean, I think if Lo Celso stays, he could be an interesting backup to him, but there's no one with that kind of creativity, that ability to kind of make something happen from nothing, pick a lock. And I think regardless of whether it's Kane or Richarlison, Kulusevski, Solomon, whatever, he's going to, you know, have loads of quality ahead of him and be really influential this season. So yeah, aside from Kane, I'm going to go for Madison as kind of standout player of the year.
Tom B.
I was going to go for James Maddison as well, but both good picks. Maybe just to zag a little bit, let's maybe go for Mickey van der Ven. I don't know that much about him, apart from what I've watched. But just to give him a shout out here, that pace, having watched Spurs in pre-season and that high line, and we've already talked about how worried I am, and I think we all are about it. Hopefully he can be that central defender that can make it a risky strategy that pays off.
Yes, I think it's a risky strategy to select a defender as player of the season. But I know where you're coming from, Tom A.
Yeah, reckless, very reckless. I think Madison 100% is the boring answer, I guess, without Kane. But I think he's just such a shoo-in for that position for Spurs. It's a great signing, I think. Assuming he can stay fit, you know, he has had a few injury problems in the last few seasons. But I think if he can stay fit, I think he'll really enjoy playing in this team for Spurs, perhaps behind Kane. I think it's an absolute nail on for Tottenham, I would say.
Yeah, I think we'll rattle through the next one. But top scorer, obviously, if Kane stays, we're all going to say Kane. If he doesn't stay, well, I'm going with Son again, obviously, because he's going to be my player of the season. Any advance on him for top scorer in Sir Harold's absence?
Well, it might sound madness, but I guess it'll be Richarlison playing through the middle if Harry has gone. He scored a hat-trick, albeit against Lion City Sailors, but he does feel more naturally a fit with the way Postecoglou's teams have played in the past. He'll stay in the box. Maybe him?
It was interesting the other day, we were in the mix, I went with Dan and Tom speaking to Kulusevski, and he was talking about one thing that Postecoglou has told him already is he wants him to be in the box more, to be getting to the back post, finishing off kind of moves, you know, at the end of counter-attacks and things. I'm not saying Kulusevski is going to be top scorer, but I think it was very much the kind of feeling of that exchange that he has it in his mind. He needs to contribute more goals this season. I don't know how many he got last season.
Two league goals. In the Premier League, only two. So it was disappointing, really.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, he should be really getting somewhere close to 10. And interesting that the Postecoglou has already kind of identified that. But yeah, Richarlison is obviously a huge question mark this season, with or without Kane, to be honest. Even if Kane stays, you know, I think Richarlison's 60 million signing, whatever it was, you know, really has to contribute more this season. Otherwise, people will be thinking next summer that maybe he needs to be offloaded, or he's been a huge flop. So, I mean, he's had his kind of season of grace with injuries, the kind of Conte factor, I guess. This one, I think he needs to deliver.
Can I just say, on Richarlison, if Kane does stay, and looking at how Spurs have shaped up in pre-season, talking about Perisic, if he stays, how he's actually quite a good fit for that left side. Solomon's come in and he's looked pretty handy. I don't really know where Richarlison's going to get a game, because Kane will play all the time. And I don't know if I really fancy Richarlison out wide in this particular team. I don't know if other people agree with me on that one. I'd be worried if I was Richarlison about game time if Kane does stay, even more so than last season.
Well, yeah, I guess Richarlison's on the phone now to the Bayern Munich official saying, for Christ's sake, just put another 15 million into the pot. Dan, top scorer for you?
Yeah, no advance on what's already been said. Yeah, I was going to make the same point as Tom A, that Kulusevski was interesting on getting more goals next season. So, yeah, I think he could easily get double figures.
Okay, as far as it being a big season for somebody and what's going to turn out to be a flop season for somebody, I'll start by saying I think it's a huge season for Emerson Royal, who has shown his ability, certainly in the second half of last season. And Dan mentioned on the pod a week or so ago that he's going to be a defensive linchpin. So I really think it's a big opportunity for Emerson to show that fabulous form after an awful start to his career at Spurs is here for the foreseeable future. And if that's the case, I think he's going to make a big difference. Flop wise, and I hate to say this because I love his attitude and he's definitely got attributes, but I've got a horrible feeling that Porro is not going to live up to expectation. Defensively, we know he's got a few issues going forward. Yeah, fantastic commitment and a decent final ball in as well, but I'm just I don't know why I've got fears about Porro. Dan?
I think in terms of standout players, I'm going to go with Bissouma. I just think he arrived with such promise. He was so impressive for Brighton as a kind of dynamic box-to-box player, you know, one of the best in the league, and we just didn't even get close to seeing anything like his best last season. It was only really under Ryan Mason in this couple of games where he started to look kind of fit and sharp again. Under Conte, that there was just nothing. And he's had, again, that year to kind of bed in. He's had his injury, you know, and it feels like Postecoglou really likes him. It feels like he came back for training kind of fitter than everyone else. He looked really on it in the first couple of preseason games in Asia and Australia. So I think, you know, it's going to be a big season for him.
Did he get injured today, Dan? Did he get injured, Bissouma? I saw him getting a knock.
Yeah, he was on the receiving end of a really rough tackle. Did he go off? I'm not sure.
No, I read that he was having treatment. It might have been just...
Yeah, he got clattered by Lewandowski, I think it was. I think he was okay. He had a very good game. He was really impressive in the midfield. And I mean, there's really interesting competition for places in there at the moment, even without Bentancur, you know, given what Skip did today. But I would fully expect Bissouma to start against Brentford. And I think with Bentancur not back until at least September, he's got a chance to really kind of nail down a place and make himself the linchpin of Postecoglou's midfield. So I think it's going to be a big season for him.
Bissouma was booked in the first half. He went off in the last couple of minutes of the game. I don't know whether that was a physical reason.
No, I don't think he was injured. The clattering was early in the first half. I was just going to say, I mean, in terms of flops, I don't really want to say I think he'll flop, but I'm not fully convinced on Vicario yet. Mm. He made some spectacular saves today, including a really nice kind of fingertip save from Alonso free kick. But his command of his area doesn't convince me yet. I'm kind of yet to see you know, his full quality with his feet, which was obviously a big selling point for buying him. You know, I feel like Spurs have had their pants pulled down a little bit with the David Reyes situation. We're kind of hearing tonight he's going to Arsenal for 25 million. I'm sure if that had been the asking price at the time, Spurs would have done that and got one of a kind of ready-made, homegrown goalkeeper who's already one of the best in the Premier League. So, you know, that's a little bit frustrating. I'm sure Vicario has the potential and quality to kind of come good in time, but I feel like it could be a pretty rocky, you know, first few months for him at least.
And the two Toms, your big hope and your, well, your feared for flop?
I fear a little bit for Eric Dier. I think this system, I'm not sure it suits him very much at all. I didn't think, obviously, he had the best of seasons last season, to put it mildly. What is he now, 29, I think? I mean, I think Dier is a very important part of the kind of Tottenham dressing room with his leadership and his personality. And given, you know, we expect Lloris to leave, possibly Kane, you know, this is now a squad that is slightly lacking in leadership and personality, to pull out all the cliches. But I do think it's kind of a young, talented, slightly fluffy looking squad right now. And I wonder if they kind of do need a bit more of sort of, you know, that kind of thing. But equally, I do think that Dyer maybe, this is a big season for him, I think. You know, it could be one of those where he gets to a sort of Harry Maguire situation at the end of the season where, you know, we're sort of talking about him moving to a club further down the division if he doesn't pull something out of the bag. Equally, I do think he's kind of got that resilience we've seen before where he can, you know, suddenly improve his performances a lot. And sometimes that is when the criticism and the pressure is on him. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him do that. But I do think it's a bit of a turning point season for him at this point in his career.
Okay, so you've actually sort of muscled him in, or mushroomed him in, as both a potential breakout star of sorts and a flop as well. I like
that. Is
that
allowed? Or?
I think that's allowed. I think so. As always, Tom A is thinking outside of the box, which is great, considering what the rest of us tend to come up with week in, week out. Tom B.
Well, I mean, I think when regards to who needs a big season, I mean, you could just name pretty much the whole squad, couldn't you, after last year? You could go through Son, Kulusevski, Skip. You know, he's someone who's done well tonight, but it feels like quite a pivotal season for him if he's going to make or break it, really, at Tottenham. But I think I might take Christian Romero. As you know, I've never been completely sold on him because I just find him so rash, even in that Shakhtar game, he flew into a challenge and got booked. It was just so unnecessary. But we obviously know he's got good technical ability. I wonder about his pace. It's not like he's slow, but with his high line, I wonder how that's going to go down. And, you know, we did that interview with him out in Perth, where he refuted the idea that he prefers playing for Argentina over Tottenham, that he's turned down offers and he's very much committed and wants to play his best years at the club. Well, now it's his chance to go and prove it. And I will be very happy to be, not prove wrong, because I still think he's a very good player, but to go from being sort of quizzical about him to completely sold on him, which hopefully will be the case this season. And regarding flop, I mean, I don't want to repeat whatever else has said, although Porro is the obvious one. I'm not really sure if he's just going to fit in this, and if he doesn't turn out to be the right fit for Postecoglou long term, just because Adoghi's quite a attacking left back, that's going to reflect really poorly on the sort of planning, because he's cost 40 million. That's a lot. So in a way, that I really hope he does make it work, but I'm skeptical that's going to happen. So I think I have to go back to Richarlison. You know what we were saying earlier, I'm not sure, quite sure where he fits in, and if he does get his big chance and Kane goes, I'm not convinced he's anywhere near the quality to replace those goals. So yeah, I from the evidence we've seen so far, I don't have full faith that that's going to be the case. So I worry about him.
Okay, our penultimate category, and we can mix these two together. What we are most looking forward to, strokes a funny, humorous moment. I mean, what I'm most looking forward to is just seeing the creativity, hopefully, of Maddison and slotting balls through, which we've been crying out for such a long time now. So if he does do what he can do, I can't wait to see that. And I also can't wait, but obviously won't be at Southampton this season, but some dingy little press conference after another heavy defeat. And Kilpatrick pipes up with a question. And Ange says, "Listen, mate, Connie told me about you. You're the reason he left. I don't want any more of your stupid questions, mate. Is that clear?" Something like that. I'm eagerly anticipating that particular bust up.
It's good. The Australian accent is good, actually. It's better than the Argentinian one, I think.
Thank you.
Oh, that's a tough act to follow. I mean, yeah. I don't know where to go from there. What am I most looking forward to? I haven't planned anything, so I'm just going to say kind of a fun Spurs team again. You know, I really don't mind if Spurs, you know, go out and lose a few games 4-2 as they've done to Barcelona tonight. And as I said at the top of the second part, you know, I think that game, you know, might be quite reflective of what we see in the first few months of the season. You know, a really encouraging performance, a kind of enterprising display that doesn't end with the right result. And I think that's fine. I think a lot of fans just want to see a Spurs team having a go and kind of trying to entertain and trying to do the right things, even if it doesn't come off every time. So I'm just really looking forward to kind of the air of positivity returning to the club and the kind of feeling that sort of football is about entertainment and joy again and not just about kind of winning and grinding out the result that it has been or has certainly felt like it's been that way over the last kind of 3 or 4 years.
I think my one's kind of related as well to both your points. You know, everyone just wants to watch entertaining football again, but I'm looking forward to watching Ange on the touchline and noting when he starts getting annoyed at his team for basically trying to play within themselves, trying to hold out for a 1-0 lead or whatever it might be, as he did against Shakhtar. And because it'll be good to see it if they do end up doing that, because that's the whole thing, right? He's trying to change it so they start playing with this positive mentality. So that would be nice. And then from about a funny one, but it will be intriguing to see what happens when Richarlison scores again, his celebration, whether he's going to downplay it this time, particularly if he's a marginal offside call, which sounds like an Ange team could become quite a regular thing. He often likes his strikers playing on the shoulder. So let's see if he calms it down this season.
I like the way you've said when Richarlison scores. I mean, there are a few who might still choose the word if, but I'm not one of them. Tom A, finally, with the... your great hope and a humorous moment, perhaps?
I mean, I'm looking forward to Postecoglou in general. I mean, I think he's such a fascinating part of this Premier League season. I really do. And I slightly feel like it's kind of at the moment, it feels like quite an internal Tottenham issue. I don't think the wider footballing public are that interested in Spurs this season. They sort of are already writing them off as kind of, you know, maybe a top 18, top 16 at best, but don't really see them as top four. Contenders. And I think that is in part because people aren't really aware of Postecoglou and his history and where he's come from. And obviously the Spurs community very much are, but I'm not sure it's really gone wider than that. And I'm just really fascinated to see how he gets on. And I'm really looking forward to just him kind of taking Spurs in a way that we haven't seen for the last, you know, 3 or 4 years with Mourinho and Conte, where everything was always so political. Everything was so, you know, wedded to the idea of money and resources and finance and ambition and winning mentality and all these kind of buzzwords that we've got used to kind of mentioning in relation to Conte and Mourinho. And actually Postecoglou is just going to be about the team. You know, he's already kind of talking about, my job is to build something, you know, it's not for me to kind of get involved in the Kane stuff. And, you know, maybe there's an argument to say that's a little bit small time, you know, a bigger, you know, higher profile manager would be getting involved in all that. But actually, right now, it feels refreshing. You know, it feels like someone who believes their job is just to improve the players and to build a fun and attacking team. Whether Spurs are going to be a serious team, I'm not sure. I think they'll be a fun team, but whether they're going to be a really serious team, I'm not sure. But I think it's going to be exciting to watch.
Which brings us to our final question. Where will they finish the season? From my own perspective, I think that we're going to have to settle for sixth place behind, alas, Arsenal, City, United, Liverpool, and one of Chelsea or Newcastle. I do think we'll finish above one of those two sides. So for me, sixth place, which I think, bearing in mind everything that's going on, would represent a pretty good campaign, especially if we have certainly one good cup run. And I think we all know that Postecoglou is going to play a strong side, even if we get Sheffield United away in the blasted third round of the cup, Sheffield United in the Premier League. I mean, whoever we play in the cups, we've got to play a strong side, but I'm going for sixth. Dan?
I'll go for fourth. I'll be optimistic. As I said at the top, you know, I think Spurs were in and around fourth for most of last season without ever playing well. So it's, you know, not beyond the realms of possibility that with an improved squad and a much more progressive manager, they're there or thereabouts again. I take your point about, you know, Chelsea and Liverpool having kind of off seasons, but there's nothing to say that a couple of those teams won't have off seasons again. You know, I certainly think Newcastle, for example, are going to, you know, massively, not struggle, but find it a lot harder playing Champions League football. And playing Premier League football with their squad as it is. So I can't see them doing as well. Who knows about Chelsea? Is it just kind of impossible to say what they'll do? Liverpool, you know, not sure they'll necessarily be back to their levels of a few years ago. So, yeah, I'm going to say that Spurs will be there or thereabouts for a top four push.
All right, so we've got a sixth and we've got a fourth and we've got two Toms to either fill us with hope or dread, going alphabetical order. Tom A?
I think with Kane, I think Spurs can probably just about get fourth. I think without Kane, Spurs could finish somewhere anywhere between about sixth and 12th. I think I think it could be that big a difference without Kane. But I will asterisk this and say that I think either way, Tottenham will do something in the cups this season that lifts the whole club. I think Postecoglou factor might translate into one of the cup competitions. Whether they win one, I don't know, but I think they will go a long way in one of them, and that might feel like a nice kind of sweetener, depending on what happens in the league.
In a similar vein, with Kane, I think fifth. I don't quite think fourth, but that might be enough for Champions League, as we just discussed earlier, Tom. Without him, I really do think eighth at best, to be honest. But I do think Tottenham will become, everyone's favourite second team this season again.
Dan's making faces. I want to know why he's making faces.
I mean, look at what Newcastle did last year as an example, with a very switched on kind of progressive organised coach. You can get fourth place.
But they're still there. They're still there. They've added to.
No, no. But
look at what they're doing.
Newcastle didn't have Harry Kane up front last year, did they? They just had Eddie Howe organising a squad properly and getting them playing the right way. And even if Spurs don't have Harry Kane, you know, they'll have Postecoglou doing that and, you know, coaching players and, you know, squeezing every last drop. So I don't know. I feel a bit more optimistic about it. Perhaps just because I've watched.
I'm with you. It's not really so much a damning indictment on Spurs, although it might come out that way. It's more, I think, the competition is a lot harder this year, whereas there was a space open last season.
We say that every year.
We've got 1 minute to squeeze in the last point here, Tom.
One last point is just, I wonder if the Kane, if he does leave, I wonder if there might be a little bit of a positive spin on it, and there's a kind of a bit of a rallying cry that the fans sort of realise that suddenly there's a team that needs support, youngsters who need support. There could be a slight kind of coming together, I think. There could be that. I think on the pitch it'll be pretty devastating, but off the pitch maybe not.
Well, ifs, buts and maybes, we'll start to find out this weekend when they go to Brentford. And of course, stay with us throughout the season. We'll see if any of us were talking any sense whatsoever. And of course, the Kane situation is the unknown factor. Guys, thank you very much indeed. Tom Allnut, Tom Barkley of The Times and The Sun, Daniel Kilpatrick of The Standard. I'm Marcus Buckland. Let's get behind the team. Come on, you Spurs.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.